All right, thanks for coming. I feel like, wow, I'm on stage, cameras, lights. It's hot up here, actually. I'm glad I wear a short sleeve. I can see you guys better. You're all the way in the back. You can come closer. So thanks for coming. My name is Beth Massey. I work at Microsoft, Visual Studio team. I'm on the team that we build the tools inside of Visual Studio for SharePoint and Office and Azure, as well as Visual Studio Lightswitch. Okay, so today I'm going to talk to you about my favorite product, Visual Studio Lightswitch. How many people in the room have never heard of this product before? Cool. You came into what the heck is this thing? Okay, cool. Because this is an intro. Okay, so the rest of you have heard of it. Out of the people who have heard of it, who's installed it? Cool. Out of the people who have installed it, who's actually opened it up and created a project? Okay. Out of those people, who is actually using Visual Studio Lightswitch in a real applications? Cool. Okay, so this might be a little basic for you. You're going to come to my next class tomorrow. Okay. So this is going to be an introduction to the technology, why we created it, what the heck is it. We'll build an application, a simple application end-to-end, and deploy it. And then tomorrow, I have an advanced class. So for folks that have already started to build applications, how you can customize Visual Studio Lightswitch. All right. So let's get started. If you don't know who I am, I mentioned I'm Beth Massey. I'm the community manager for the BizApps team. Okay, we build those tools in Visual Studio for building business applications. So I'm all about business applications. I'm not consumer applications. Okay, I've got 5 years at Microsoft. On March 22nd, it'll be 5 years. Woo, I made it. Still there. They didn't fire me yet. Before that, though, I was an MVP, an architect MVP, and I have a lot of experience building business applications, mostly in the healthcare field for the course of my career. Okay, I went from Foxpro and Clipper to Oracle and SQL Server and all that stuff. So I don't love data, but I need data. Okay, so I'm the architect that makes data import or brings data to life. Let's put it that way. All right, so that's who I am. So why did we build Visual Studio Lightswitch in the first place? Okay, so Visual Studio Lightswitch, we targeted at two audiences, okay, for this product. Okay, the first audience, we realized, we did a lot of research and we realized in the real world, there's a lot of folks out there that are building business applications that don't get paid to write code like professional developers do. Okay, they are your what we call end user developers. They're comfortable with writing scripts and code if they have to, but that's not their primary job function. Okay, we run into this a lot. I think as professional developers, we come in and we see applications that are not scaling, or you know, they're mission critical applications. The functionality is important to the business, but they're not designed correctly, and they usually have to be rewritten. Okay, that kind of thing. So we try to solve that problem with Lightswitch, okay? So that's our primary target audience is the end user developers. But we also have a target audience of you guys. I mean, you guys come to these conferences. I'm assuming everybody in this room is a professional developer that you get paid to write code every day or do something in IT, okay? Who's not? Who's more of a business analyst or DBA? Okay, cool. Very cool. Then you are the primary target audience. The rest of us in the room, professional developers, we geek out in Visual Studio Ultimate Edition, and we dive into code, and we love C Sharp, okay, that kind of thing, right? I don't. I love VB, but okay. Woo! Okay. at any rate, that we found that there's a lot of professional developers that are struggling to write these types of applications quickly. They're not as high priority, say, in an enterprise, and say maybe your enterprise services or whatever you're doing at the enterprise level, but these are departmental productivity apps that you may have a long list of requests from departments that need certain applications to help get their job done, and you just don't have time to write those things. And so what's end up happening is those guys in the departments just start writing their own things, right? Okay, so this is to help you create applications, these types of applications, faster as well. Okay, so Lightswitch is the simplest way to build business applications, not only for the desktop, but also for the web and the cloud. Okay, so we'll see that the publishing mechanisms that you have in Lightswitch allow you to even publish it to Azure, okay? So that you could host your application in Windows Azure or on your own web servers, or maybe you don't have a server. You just want to run it on a simple client server. You have a database and a machine. You can do that too. You can deploy it as a two-tier app as well. Okay, so let's talk about the development experience. Lightswitch is about two things, really. At its core, there's two things. Number one, it's about data. Okay, if you don't have data in your application, then you don't use Lightswitch, okay? Because Lightswitch is all about data. Okay, where that data comes from could be multiple places. Data source, types of data sources could be different. But it's you have to describe your data or point it to some data, okay? And then it's about screens. Okay, it's about UI. It's about the user interface. The user interacts with that data. Users need to find data. They search for data. Okay, they insert data. They update the data. They delete data. They do CRUD on this data. Okay, so Lightswitch is all about doing all the plumbing for you related to that function over data. Okay, so you create screens and data. After that, just after you finish those two tasks, you actually have a fully functional application. You don't necessarily have to write any code at all, okay? But you're probably going to at some point. Okay, that's what makes your business application specific to the type of business that you're in. Okay, the code that you write is the only code that you could write. Does that make sense? Okay, it's the only code that you could write, the business functionality. Microsoft can't write that code for you. Microsoft can write the code that does all the plumbing stuff for you, the framework. We can't write the code that runs your business. That's up to you. So that's what you start doing. You start authoring business logic, validation rules and business logic around that data. And then you probably want to, tweak the UI a little bit. Okay, so we have screens, templates that help you create screens, so you don't have to do much. You can just pick a template and hit F5 and go. But you probably are going to start to customize the screen layouts, and that's you're totally flexible in that regard. You can do that. And then, of course, usually over time, data starts to get bigger and bigger and bigger, and so we probably need to start filtering data and defining queries over our data. Now, by default, Lightswitch is very smart. It only pulls 45 rows of data asynchronously, so it's not pulling the whole table of information. But users are probably going to want to search or filter for that data in different ways. So queries is also a very first-class construct or concept in Lightswitch. Okay, so data, screens, queries. At this point, probably could be finished with the application. Okay, your end-user developer probably will stop here. Okay, but for a professional developer, we have a whole entire extensibility model, and I'll talk more about this tomorrow in the advanced class. We'll show you some extensions and some customizations you can do. But Lightswitch provides you to create your own controls, your own data sources, your own shells, themes, business types. There's a whole extensibility model around these concepts within Lightswitch. Okay, we have partners like Infragistics and Component One and DevExpress that have created extensions for Lightswitch. You can explore the ecosystem. There's also, I think, about 90 or so free ones that the community has created. Whatever they are. They could be controls. They could be a lot of the different things, themes and stuff that they've created. You can download them. You can use them for free. Okay. You can also create your own if you'd like, all right, if you need to. If you have a specific requirement for some piece of UI that just isn't in Lightswitch out of the box, you can create that yourself. Okay, so that's the development experience. Okay, we wanted to make sure that Lightswitch would grow as your business needs grow. Not just scalability-wise in the number of users that can use the application at the same time, but also functionality-wise. We didn't want you to hit a glass ceiling with Lightswitch, so that's why the extensibility model is there. Okay, I'm going to go through this demo, and if the folks that have started to play with Lightswitch, this actually is a sample that you can download and a walkthrough that you can go through. I've changed the walkthrough to the Beth Massey version. Okay, so it's going to be a little different. But the application you can download from the Developer Center. It's about a vision clinic, okay? So an eye doctor, you walk into the eye doctor. So we're going to write an application for a small vision clinic. And there are a set of requirements that they have. First, they have some on-premise data. They have a product catalog of products, like, you know, related to your eyes, okay, that they need to prescribe to patients, okay? So they already have a small SQL Server database sitting on-premise. Then they have a bunch of technicians. Some of those technicians need to have the application interface with devices, okay? Like this case, it's the retinal scanners or that kind of thing, okay? So that's another requirement. Lightswitch needs to be able to interface with devices. Okay, another requirement is we have a front office guy, and he needs to get that data in and out of Lightswitch from office, okay, from office applications, so that they can he can write invoices and use Word to create reports and things like that, Excel, and do analysis in Excel, that kind of thing. I don't know if you saw it, but in the back, SharePoint pops up. They have a SharePoint server, and they're storing documentation and images and that kind of thing related to their patients. So they want to be able to see that data also in Lightswitch as well. And finally, when we finish the application, they don't want to maintain another server. Okay, the database is cruising along, but they don't have an IT guy. Okay, they don't have anybody to manage this thing. So they want to be able to just deploy it to Azure. Okay, and they just let Azure handle running the application itself. Okay, so let's go ahead and get away from the slides. Okay, so this is Visual Studio Lightswitch Edition. Okay, Lightswitch is its own Visual Studio version. Okay, you have Express, you have Lightswitch, you have Pro Premium Ultimate. Okay, now if you have Pro Premium Ultimate, you can install Lightswitch. Lightswitch was released in July, end of July. You can install the Lightswitch package, and it will integrate right into those versions, okay? You'll just see it as another template. This, though, is Lightswitch Edition. So this is what the primary end-user developer would buy for, I think it's like $199 right now or $299, something like that, okay? You can see that it's not the NASA Control Center. It doesn't have 45 menu items. It's very basic, okay? It's a good thing, streamlined, just for building Lightswitch applications. Okay, it does have integration with TFS still. It still allows you to do source control if you want, but it doesn't have all the knobs and doohickeys you normally would have with Ultimate Edition. Okay, so I'm going to create a new project. You'll notice that, so here's the installed templates. The only thing is Lightswitch. I've gone online. Do I have connectivity? Maybe I don't. Connecting. Okay, well, I don't know if I have connectivity. Okay, well, let's pretend we do. If you go online, you can browse for templates. Okay, so we have the starter kits that you can install. There's like six different ones, I think. And in this case, I've already installed a couple of them. This one's the customer service, an issue tracker, and a time tracker. There's other things related to different types of verticals. If you want to get started, you know, building these types of apps, you can use these and kind of give you a good starting point. They're fully functional applications. There is no Vision Clinic starter kit, so we're going to create a blank project. Okay, so I'm going to call this Vision Clinic. It's really hot up here. I feel like my hair is burning off. Anybody, let me know if you see smoke coming out. I have a lot of hair product in here. Okay, this hair doesn't, I don't wake up like this. Unfortunately, I'm Italian. Okay, so the first question, if you notice, there was a VB and C# template. Those are the language choices, the first thing you make, okay? But the real first thing, the real first question Lightswitch asks you is data. It's around data, because you have to start with data, Lightswitch. There's two different choices from data. One, you can start creating data, create tables. Okay, you can create your own database through Lightswitch. Or you can attach to external data sources. And we're actually going to do both, because we mentioned we had that on-premise data of products. We need to integrate that into our application. So we're going to actually be relating multiple data sources together. Okay, so I'm going to attach to an external data source first. Notice it's database. SharePoint is also a data source. Okay, SharePoint 2010. SharePoint 2010 exposes its list of data through an OData services, and Lightswitch knows how to talk to those OData services. Okay, so any custom list data can be pulled into Lightswitch and edited. Otherwise, you can write your own RIA service. Okay, you write your own RIA service around data sources that Lightswitch doesn't support. The database, whatever entity framework for provider you have installed, that's what the databases you support. Like Oracle, MySQL, those guys have entity framework for providers. We also have entity framework providers for QuickBooks. RSS Bus has a bunch of providers that you can buy for, you know, integration with Twitter and Facebook and fun stuff like that as well. I have the database in SQL, so I've got that provider installed by default. So let's get at that data. Okay, and the name of the database is Prescription Contoso. Okay, so this should look similar to most of the dialogues, the attached data source wizard. What it does is it just reads the tables inside the database. I've got products, and I've got a set of rebates that apply to those products any given moment that discounts the price. So I'm going to go ahead and select both of those. Okay, so this is what we call the data designer. Okay, here's where you're modeling entities. Now, it's reading in external data, but you're also creating data through the data designer as well. Underneath the covers for us geeks, and I'll get a little more into architecture tomorrow, but this is just Entity Framework. It's not the Entity Framework Designer, because that's like the NASA Control Center. We wanted to be able to simplify the process of, you know, defining the data model. So you're just focused on one table or one entity at a time. Okay, so in this case, we have product rebate. And we have products, and we navigate. You're only seeing the direct relationships at any given moment, and you navigate just by clicking on that, the table name. All right, so I've got product, and you'll notice that I can't change. Let's see, let's do this. I can't change the underlying storage type. LightSwitch does not let you change the schema of an external database. Okay, so but what I can do is I can specify what's called a business type. LightSwitch has this concept of a higher level type above storage where it allows the LightSwitch user, gives them immediate feedback on validation and whatever that business type is. In this case, money is compatible with the decimal that I'm storing in the database, so I can go ahead and change the type to a compatible business type. So you'll see that for money, in this case, there's some declarative validation around money. Here's the currency code. Okay, you can put we could put it in euros if we'd like, the currency symbol, that sort of thing. All right, so it's gonna force the visual to be money. All right, another one is image. This is a product image, so I want to display this as an image. And also, LightSwitch gives you a free editor, allows you to upload images into the database automatically. You don't have to write any of that stuff. So I'm gonna change that type to image. Another couple things I'm gonna do is I'm just going to uncheck the display by default with the ID. So this just goes across screens what's going to show up on a screen or not by default. Okay? And I'm going to go over to product rebates and do the same idea. I'm going to change this to money because the rebate is money. And I'm going to change the date time to just show a date instead. Okay, so let's go ahead and start creating. We need some more tables. We need patients and we need their prescriptions because this is the products that we select on the prescriptions. So I'm going to go ahead and what you can do is just right-click on data sources and we say add table. This time I'm going to type patient, if I can type, P-A-T-I-E-N-T. Woo, keyboard. All right. I'm going to define some fields. So let's do last name. That's required. First name. Make that required. We have social security numbers in the U.S., you probably have identification numbers in this country too, right? Okay, so we'll go ahead and do that. Gender. What else we got? Let's do phone. Okay, so phone number is another business type, okay? So we get some validation, declarative validation here. You can specify what format you want the validation to run in, okay? So what the order is. Okay, and email address is another business type right here. In this one, you can select whether or not you want to require the email domain or not, and whether or not you want a default email domain displayed. Okay, so that'll give us validation on the email format. All right, so let's just go ahead and maybe do address, city, state. Oops, I have a space. I did a space there. State. Zip. Okay, I'll make that not required. Okay, cool. See, now we're going to need another table. So I'll just go ahead and say new table here. And we're going to need prescriptions here. Okay, so we have a prescription date was prescribed. And I'm just going to make this a date, not a date time. Actually, we'll make it required. And some notes. String. All right, now we need to start relating some things together. So now we need to define the relationships. So click the relationship button here. You'll see that this is a very simplified, you know, it's simple to understand. Let's put it this way. This is simple to understand. We're defining a relationship from the prescription to we need patient. Okay, so the patient is a one-to-many relationship here. You'll notice down on the bottom, try to be very clear. So, you know, there is a prerequisite of light switches, probably something about, you know, I have to kind of know what data is. I know what a table is. But most business users know that concept. They work in Excel. They have columns and rows. They understand what a table is. Relationship, defining relationships sometimes, you know, they need to be helped through that process. And so down at the bottom, you can see that it's very descriptive, so it's clear what they're doing. Okay, so I'm going to set up a one-to-many here. I also need to define a relationship to the product. We need to be able to choose products here on our prescriptions. So here's product. Now, this time, it's a little different because what I'm doing is I'm defining a virtual relationship between two completely separate data sources, two different databases. Okay, so in this case, what LightSwitch is telling me is that I can enforce the relationship, but I can't enforce the referential integrity. That's really what it's saying here. So what I'm going to do is I need to store the ID from that external data source into my table. Okay, so if I go ahead and delete a product somewhere completely outside of LightSwitch, it's just going to disappear from the record. Okay, it can't force the referential integrity, but what's really cool is it can bring stuff together on the same screen from multiple sources and you can edit them together. Okay, all right, so that's cool. I'm going to just say, yeah, that's great. All right, so the only thing is I don't want to display these IDs on the screen, so I'm just going to uncheck display by default. Okay, the other thing I'm going to do is we spend a lot of time in LightSwitch in the data model itself. I mean, really, you're pretty much going to define, you're going to sit inside of the data designer most of the time because we're also going to write business rules around our data model itself. You hardly ever write code in screens. Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to define what's called a summary property. LightSwitch has this concept of a summary property. And what that means is when you see the UI, you'll kind of get the idea. But when we display an entity on a screen or like a search screen, the user needs to know what that thing is. And this just describes the thing. So this in this case, patient summary property is last name. By default, LightSwitch will pick the first string property on your entity. But I don't want to display just the last name. I want to display the last name, comma, first name. That's what a patient, when a user sees a patient, they should see both of that information. Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to add what's called a computed property. Computed properties are not stored inside the database. They're only stored on the model itself. Okay, so I'm going to call this full name. Okay, and it's a string. So now what I need to do is I need to define the method. It's a computed property, so what is the result that I should display? Okay, so here's where we're first seeing code. Okay, so you jumping into some code. Can you guys see that in the back? You need me to up the font? Yeah? Yes? That's cool. I can do that because there's this thing right here. Cool. All right, so the result is going to just equal, I'm just going to do the last name plus a comma plus first name. That works. Okay? So that's our computed property. So now I'll go back to the designer, and for the summary property of patient, we're just going to go ahead and select the full name now. Okay? Cool. All right, another couple things we're going to want to do is set up some validation on a couple things. One is gender. I'm from San Francisco, but usually we only have males and females in the world. I don't know. You guys are Dutch. There may be more. But let's say there's just male and female as the choice. So I don't want the user to freeform text, you know, male, female, because that's not good for data storage, right? You want to be able to force them into a set of static values. You create what's called a choice list. Okay, so I'm going to store in the database an F for female and an M for male. Okay, cool. Let's see. Do I have internet? Ah, yes. because that would be cool. All right. All right. So the other thing I want to do is I want to do a business rule on Social Security number. There's a specific format to this number. Okay. So now that I have internet, because I never remember these things, but regexlib.com. You guys ever heard of this thing? Let's see if I got it. It's awesome because it has a bunch of regular expressions. So I'm just going to use a regular expression. I'm going to find one for a Social Security number. And I hope SSN. I know they have some. There's like 100 of them. No? Okay. Maybe their search is broken. Hey, that looks better. Okay, here's a pattern. I'm just going to steal that thing. I know this is what end user developers do, right? They just go on the internet, they find code, and then they plug it into their app, right? So that's exactly what I'm doing. All right, so what I'm going to do is selecting Social Security number. You'll notice up at the top of every designer in LightSwitch, there's this write code button, okay? So the context of the property here is there's the validate for Social Security number, but you'll also notice there's a lot of different methods, particularly around the entity itself. Okay, we can do things when we create a patient or when we're deleting or deleted patients. Okay, so you actually can tap into what's called the submit pipeline. Tomorrow I'll get a little bit more into some complex validation using the submit pipeline. You also have access control methods. We'll get to that in a minute. You also have query methods. You can control how the queries are executing, whatever you need to do, apply security rules, that kind of thing. You also have some methods that are called when things fail that you can handle. Okay, so I'm just going to go into the validate. Okay, and what I'm going to do is say if I have a Social Security number, SSN, not equal to empty, okay, then I'm going to say system.text.regular expressions.regex is a match. If it's not a match, what do I need? Input is string. This is the Social Security number. And that, if they don't match, what I'm going to do is I'm going to return a property error. Okay, so what this does is it tells LightSwitch to create a visual on the screen that adorns the property itself, the Social Security number, with a red box and an alert. Okay, so please enter a valid SSN. All right, so that's how you do validation rules. Okay, you can go through your entire model. I mean, I could do, you know, rules on rebate start and end dates and that kind of stuff, okay, but you get the idea. So that's really where you're focusing is you're writing these rules. LightSwitch will handle when to call these rules. These particular property errors will run, or validate methods, excuse me, will run on the client first and then on the server when the submit happens too, okay? So it's smart to run these rules in both places. Okay, so we've got some business rules. Our data model is looking pretty good. So what I'm going to do now is we're going to start developing some screens. All right, so let's first add. We're going to need to add some new data in the system. I don't have any patients, so let's add a new data screen. Okay, so let's select patient. This is an extensibility point. You can write your own screen templates, but out of the box, you get these five. Okay, we'll walk through some more in a minute. But this is the new data screen, and I've now then select the data that I want on the screen, in this case, patient. And it will pull up any of the relations. So you could go ahead and throw prescriptions on here at the same time. I'm not going to do that for the new screen, but you'll see all the relations here that you could add. Okay, so generates a screen for us, and I'm just going to go ahead and run this. Okay, so now the only code we wrote was around our data itself, right? Only code we could write. Okay, so there's our new patient screen. Let's go ahead and enter me. I made phone number and email required. But let's say I don't. These are required because they were bold. You'll notice that automatically I get validation errors firing, right? Because these are required fields. That's a declarative validation. Okay, so, I got to save. When you hover over them, you'll see a value is required. All right, so let's go ahead and fill that out. Let's test our Social Security number. That was a custom rule. Okay, that's failed. And there's our custom message. So I need to enter the right format. Okay. Gender, you'll see this a drop down here. Okay, so it's an autocomplete box, male and female. So you can just type F for female. Phone number. Okay, values required. But this is a business type. This is a business type that also has an editor as well associated with it. So you'll notice that it will format a phone number, but you can also drop it down and enter them in separate boxes here. So my phone number. That's not my phone number, but this is my email. Okay, so if I don't type the correct email, now the error is invalid email address. Okay, so BethMA is my email. At Microsoft.com. M-I-C-R. It's that time of day. The jet lag is kicking in. All right. Woo. I hate that. Okay, so there. I filled out all the required fields now. Okay, so let's go ahead and just save this. Now, you'll notice LightSwitch automatically just saved it and now is redisplaying the record to us. We didn't actually define this screen at all. What LightSwitch does is it looks and sees, okay, well, I'm assuming, you know, you don't want to just see something blank. There's no other screen to go to. So I'm just going to redisplay that so you can edit it again if you need to. And it generated this screen based on our data model and the order in which we defined the fields inside of that entity itself. Okay, and I forgot to mark the ID. I didn't want to require that on the patient, but at any rate. But what I really want to do is I want to start adding prescriptions, right? So we really do want to define our own edit screen. So let's go ahead and get out of here. Add screen. This time I'm going to select detail screen for the patient, and I'm going to select the prescriptions on there, okay? The other thing I'm going to want to do, because now we're going to start to get more and more patients in here, I'm going to create a search screen. But I want the search screen to be the first thing that the user sees when they open the application. LightSwitch will by default make the first screen you create here the first screen the user sees, but you can right click on screens and edit the screen navigation to change that. So I'm going to just select search patients and set that one there. Why isn't our detail screen listed here? Because it needs an ID, right? So you can't just open the screen, right? So that's exactly right. Okay, so you'll see how this works when we go to search. LightSwitch will automatically open up the detail screen anytime we click on a patient. All right, so let's go ahead and run this again. I'll enter another patient so we can search across two patients. And let's see what LightSwitch gives us out of the box. All right, so here's our search screen. I only have one person in it, so let's just create two people. So let's do Finder Joe. I always use Joe in all my demos. All right. He's in Redmond, so that's 425-555. And email. I don't think that's his email, though. All right. Now we've got two patients in here. Now you'll notice when we save the patient, now we get the screen we defined. Okay, so this is the default detail screen that we just created. So now we can go ahead and we can add prescriptions. Okay, so I can click on this. I get a screen generated for me here based on my entity. I could save some notes. Take twice daily. And select the product. Now remember, this is coming from our external data source. It's just by default showing the product name, the summary property in a dropdown. Notice they're out of order, though. Probably want to change that, right? Okay, we'll change that in a minute. All right, so let's give Joe some eye drops, all right? Okay, I want to change the way this screen looks a little bit. You should notice that LightSwitch, I mean, I kind of glossed over this fact, but, you know, you have a whole entire application shell that it's generated. By default, you've got the ribbon across the top. You can add more commands across the top yourself. And this is your navigation menu here on the left. And in the middle, you'll have a tab view of all your forms, okay, of your screens. Okay, so what's nice about LightSwitch is we've kind of tried to eliminate the need to circle back into Visual Studio to do any layout changes, okay? So meaning how many times do you press F5 in a day? Everybody always laughs, like 10,000? Okay, we tried to make it, cut it down to 5,000. So what you do is you click on Design Screen. You don't have to close the debugger. You don't have to close the debugger and go back to Visual Studio, okay? You can just design the screen here in LightSwitch. Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm just going to make some changes to the layout. I'm going to go and what I want to show here is I want to show this data grid row, but I want to show it as read-only. And what I want to do is underneath the data grid, I want to add a set of controls that lets me edit that item. Okay, and I already have patient on the top here, so we'll do it that way. The other thing is I want to, instead of just showing a blank text here, this is the live preview right here, it's just showing the text. It's the summary property. I'm going to change that because we actually have a picture we want to display as well. So I'm going to change that to the image. And you'll see it's actually updating in real time there. So the name, MSRP, and maybe the description here. Okay? So that kind of gives it a little bit nicer look and feel. Okay, so we could change the same thing down in product too. Say I wanted to, not this one. It's an autocomplete box, but say I wanted to display, you know, two columns or whatever. So you can actually change that here. You could change it to a columns layout and put as many rows inside. So you're basically changing the template inside of the control as well. So you can do that as well. All right, so I'm not going to mess too much with that. Just save it. Okay, so now we've got, you know, a little bit nicer looking data grid down here at the bottom. Okay, so that's called the customization mode that light switch lets you do. Okay, so when you do layout changes. All right, so next thing we wanted to do is we wanted to change the order of this, right? So that it's in alphabetical order. Probably it'd be nicer for the user to see that alphabetical order. So let's go ahead and close that down. The way we do that is with queries. I mentioned queries. That's another construct inside of light switch. So what we're going to do is we're going to go to products. Okay, so right-click on products, and then you can add a query. And this is the query designer. Okay, so I'm going to call this sorted products, and add a sort on the product name ascending. All right, so now you can add filters. I don't need a filter in this particular case. And we could add groups, you know, ands and ors and that sort of thing. Okay, so you can get fairly complex in the filtering. You can add parameters. You can create parameterized queries, that sort of thing. We'll do one of those in a minute. Another kind of cool thing is you see this source button or source dropdown. And what I could do is I can base queries on other queries. Okay, so they're kind of composite. You can build them up, all right, which is cool. All right, so let's just use the sorted products. Now we got to go use that on our screen over here. So let's go back to our patient detail. What I'm going to do is add a data item, okay? So what I'm doing now is I'm adding into the view model here on the left side a query, another query, our sorted products, which is right here, okay? Okay, so let's look at this. We've got sorted products, we've got prescription query, we've got a patient. There's our patient ID as a property on the screen. Then I've got close, refresh, save. So this is not only your queries and the data that's on the screen, but also any commands and any other additional properties on the screen. So that's like your view model. The center here is what's called the content, okay, the content tree. These are content items. All right, so you can change around how these content items work or look. Okay, you can move them up and down, whatever you want, reorder them. But all I'm going to do is select the drop-down, the autocomplete box, and you'll see there's a choices property right here. It's set to auto. Okay, which just means select anything that's in the table in that order, just put that in there. I'm going to say, okay, no, use the sorted products. Okay, so that's how we use a query on the screen. So let's go ahead and make sure that looks right. Okay, so here's our summary properties. And they're links. Okay, now I can go into Joe. Click on Joe, and there's our stuff here. And now when I do the drop down, you'll see that now it's in alphabetical order, okay? Yeah? It accessed the database when I clicked that, or when I click refresh. Okay, if I click refresh, it'll do it as well. Okay, it accessed, it hit it once, yes, and it ran that query. No, I mean, now the first time, okay, or unless I click refresh, okay, so now it's down, it's right there. It didn't hit the database again, okay. It will hit the database again if I keep clicking refresh, okay. So it's loading data asynchronously is a good question. Actually, let's go take a look a little bit. I'll show you a couple properties real quick. Tomorrow I'll get a little deeper into it, but if we go into sorted products, we highlight that query. you'll see the properties of that query. See, it's set to auto execute. So just means, you know, it's going to go ahead and grab the data when it needs it. The number of items to display per page. Okay, so 45 is the default. Okay, you can increase that or decrease that. So it's not selecting star. It's only selecting 45. And then whether or not, you know, you support the paging or the searching and that sort of thing. So actually, a good way of looking at it is, let's go back to our search screen real quick. And I'll show you how the searching kind of works by default. Okay, everything's really a query in the end. The patient itself is actually a query by ID, but I didn't have to write that. LightSwitch is doing it for me. In this case, this is just saying select all the patients and it 45 of them at a time. Select all the patients and all of the rows. So here you'll see there's the paging down at the bottom. We load the data asynchronously. And when you search, all the data grids in LightSwitch by default have a search. And so if I say, let's say 123, if I search 123, it's going to pull up me because it sees 123 and the social security number. If I say, you know, Joe, it's just going to bring back Joe. So what it does is it searches across all the string fields by default in the table. And Joe is the same as capital Joe. Not case sensitive, right? Okay, so that's kind of a user productivity feature. Another thing is, like I told you, one of our requirements was working with Excel. It will export anything that you see in the grid to Excel automatically with that button there. Okay, that's on by default. You can shut it off, it's on by default. Okay, so we try to make these smart defaults that are kind of like make sense to users that are using the application around data so that you don't have to write all of this yourself. Okay, all right, so let's get a little deeper into queries. Let's do one that is that requires a parameterized query. What I want to do is I want to create a screen that works with the products. Okay, so I'm going to add a query, but I want to pull up products by category. There's a category string property on the product itself. If you look at the entity, we've got a thing called category. It's just free form, but we've got a category stuck in there, product table. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to create a query, products by category, and I'm going to base that on our sorted products. Well, if I change the sort order, and then all of our query sort orders change. Okay, so and then I'm going to add a filter where the category is equal to a parameter, and I need to create a new one. Okay. Now, you can create parameters that are also optional as well, okay? So it's up to you. It depends on whether or not you want the query parameter to be, I'm jet lagged now, the parameter to be required or not. And what that means is LightSwitch will go ahead and execute the query when you open the screen if you said it is optional. Okay, because the parameter would be optional. If the parameter is required, then LightSwitch waits until that parameter is filled out to execute the query. So you can still auto-execute the queries. LightSwitch is smart enough to figure out when that parameter is filled. So let's see it in action. Let's create a screen. Okay, and this time I'll just create a list and detail screen for the products by category. And I'm going to go ahead and include the rebates as well in that. Now we have a parameter. So what did LightSwitch do when it created the screen? It actually will create a field for that parameter at the top of the screen the user must fill out. So let's go ahead and try out the screen here and see how it works. Okay, so there's our screen right there. You'll notice that it comes up, there's nothing. Okay, so it's waiting for me to enter a category. So allergy is a category. I just hit enter or you hit tab. And it auto-executed the query. Okay, so I've got two products that have allergy in the category. Note that it's not case-sensitive, which is awesome. Okay, so how do we calculate the price? So MSRP is the manufacturer's suggested retail price, but we have all these rebates here, right? So none of them, actually, do some of them apply? Yes, some of them should apply. Okay, so we got the $2 off, so it really should be, right, so 2-1, right. So it really should be $18. So I don't want the user to have to calculate that in their head. I want to be able to put that on the screen. So let's talk a little bit about calculated properties in the context of money and calculating things. Because users always want to see that stuff on the screen. So let's go over to product. Let's go ahead and add, add a computed property. Now, I'm not allowed member to change the schema of the product, but I can add computed properties because these are not stored in the schema, right? Or in the database itself. These are on the model. So let's call this current cost. And it's going to be money. So now I've got to figure out the current cost. Okay, so let me up that a little bit. Okay. All right, so I could write, you know, a for each loop around all the product rebates and tally up the rebates and then minus that from MSRP, but that would be, like, boring, right? So why don't I use a link query instead? So you can write link in here, so let's do it. It's more fun. So you can write any code, you know, you need. So I'm just going to aggregate. I have to aggregate the rebates in me.productRebates here. Okay, so they apply where r.start is less than or equal to today. And also, the rebate end is greater than date.today into the sum of the rebate. Okay. All right, so that gives us a decimal, yes. So now we just, the result is equal to me.msrp minus the total. Okay, so all I did is I defined the code that returns the right result from a computed property. Now all I need to do is I just need to go back to our screen, okay, the products by category list detail screen, and add this. I'm going to add it right underneath the category here. Display the current cost. And I'm going to just make it a little bit bold, font style strong, so we see that. Okay, so I don't have to hook up anything on the screen to trigger this computation. LightSwitch will automatically run that code whenever needed. Okay, so then there's a lot of conditions that we'll need to figure out and handle, a lot of data conditions that could cause that to change. So let's go open up this screen and get back our data. Okay, so there's $18, right? I had calculated that in my head. LightSwitch did it quicker. Okay, so things that could cause this to change, right? So the MSRP changing, right? 25, there's 23 now. Change this row to 1. Okay, that's 24. Add a row. The start date is like this. Put us in the range here. Rebate another $10 off, say. Okay, now it's 14. Let's go ahead and what other one is apply here? Let's delete that. 15. Okay, so it's always updating based on the data that could affect it. Okay, so you don't have to manually hook that up. You like that? Because you know you always forget one event, right? Yeah. They're read-only. Computed properties are read-only. Okay, that's the nature of a computer property. If you need something, storage property would create a regular field. Okay. All right, so that's computed properties. Let's go ahead and save that. What else do I want to show you? Let's talk about, we got time. Let's talk about permissions, user permissions and security, because a lot of times, are there any questions on screens, data? Yeah, go ahead. So localization, yeah, that's a good question. How does localization work? Localization, obviously, I'm typing in English here, okay? So if you were typing in Dutch here, then, right? But the built-in, you know, stuff, what you do is you go to general properties up here, and you could change the culture here, all right? All right, so I have it in English, and that's why you say save, refresh, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so I don't know what it is in Dutch. If I do that, though, then I won't know how to use the application, so we won't do that. I know a little bit of Spanish, but that's it. Okay, so let's talk about user permissions, though. So any other questions on what I've showed so far? Sorry. Yeah. To do grouping.
Yeah.
What in what context?
Like a key for your methods.
It depends on the query that you create. So
you mean in the data grid itself, you want to see a group?
The data grid, this built-in data grid does not do grouping. Okay, but I hear Telerik has a great grouping data grid. You can use their data grid. You can use any data Silverlight data grid out there that does grouping. Okay, so all right, so let's move along. Yes. Okay. Access control. All right. So a very common business requirement, right, is don't let users see certain pieces of data. Don't let them edit things. Don't show them that screen. Don't, you know, we have a lot of rules like that, right? So we create users. We usually create roles. Users are part of roles, and we add permissions to those roles, and then we check permissions all through the application. Okay, so Lightswitch has a framework, a really nice, actually, security or access control framework, we call it. Okay, so there's two pieces to it. The first piece is, how do I know who you are is who you say you are? Okay, so that's the authentication piece. Okay, so first we have to authenticate. There's two ways to authenticate in Lightswitch. One, Windows authentication. Whatever they logged in their machine, that's, we pass those credentials to Lightswitch, to the military. The other option is, you say you're not on a Windows. That's very valid for an internal network, intranet. Everybody's on Windows machines. Okay, very typical business applications are like that. Otherwise, you want to deploy to Azure or a website, or it's a public, maybe it's a consumer app, you know, and you want to support Macintosh. And so you need to support forms authentication in that case, and that just means they type in a username and password. Okay. Underneath the covers, Lightswitch is using the ASP.NET membership provider for this, so that's how it's being stored, as an encrypted password if you use forms authentication. All right, so I'm going to just use Windows in this case. You have an additional selection here. One is, you know, I need to specifically allow sets of users in my enterprise or on my domain access to certain things. Or you could say, you just allow any Windows authenticated user. If you're on the network, go ahead, you can use the application. Okay, so there's two ways to do this. Okay, so I'm going to select this. And now what you do is you define sets of permissions. It's up to you as the developer, because this is what you're going to use to check in code in places. So what I'm going to do is I want to make sure that you only certain users can update, insert, or delete patient data. Okay, so I'm going to do can add patient. That'll be a permission. Okay, can delete. And can update. Okay. So now that I've defined my sets of permissions, now you can go ahead and check in code anywhere you want to do things, okay? But there are specific hooks that Lightswitch gives you. Number one, on the data entity, on the data model itself. This is the most important place to make your access control check, okay? So write code button, drop that down, and you'll see access control methods. Can delete, can insert, even can read, okay? Can update, can execute. Okay, so I'm going to need some of these. So can insert is add. I keep doing that, huh? Control, there we go. Get it up. All right. Here's how we check it. So we need to just return true or false. And the way we could check the permission set is there's an application object, and there's a user object on that. And we just ask it, has permission. And there's our can add, can delete, can update. Okay, so this is can insert, and that's can add. Okay. I also have a couple other checks we need to perform. So I'm going to do a can delete as well as a can update. Okay, so can delete, okay, and this one, can update. Okay, so you also have hooks on the queries themselves, okay? So if I go into, go into this query, go to write code, you'll see there's the access control method. Can you execute this query or not? Screens also have access control. Whoop, this moved. Okay, so they also have access control here. Can run. Okay, so actually, what I should do is I should actually check that here on the new screen, okay, on the create new patient screen. But let's not, okay, and see if we have a security hole that we forgot. Okay, so let's go ahead and run this. Now, the way that this works is that checkbox granted for debug allows the developer, you know, when you're debugging, to set check on and off the permissions. What's going to return true or false? I actually have them all set to false. Okay, so this avoids you having to log into the app. Like if you were doing forms authentication, you don't have to log into the app while you're developing it. Okay, so that's just a hassle, right? So, all right, so let's see what, I got no permission to do any of these things. Let's see what the application looks like now. Okay, so I just put those hooks in the entity. Okay, so first, you know, I can read. That's not a problem. But if I want to, like, open the screen, okay, you'll notice that none of this data is editable. Okay, so I can't update it. If we go over to the search, I'm just going to show you here. I'm going to go in and on this command bar, I'm going to add some commands like add new and edit and delete. Okay. Notice none of them are enabled. Okay, so Lightswitch is reading those permissions whenever it needs to, and it's modifying the UI accordingly. Okay, so the thing we forgot, though, is we got the new patient screen, right? So let's put my mom in here. She has bad eyesight. Oops. Okay. I should have changed this. Okay. Okay, so I try and save. You'll notice that the check happens on the middle tier. You're not allowed to actually save. We've created a very frustrating situation for our user, right? Like, oh, man. Okay, so we really don't want to display the screen to them. Okay, but know that your data is secure. So it's really important to put the access control hooks on the data itself. Even if you forget a screen, you'll be okay. Your user might not like it, but what you really want to do is you want to just go into the can run. And we're already in application. That is the object we're on. Okay, so has permission. All right? So now that screen just won't appear on the menu. Okay, cool. So any questions on access control? No? Pretty easy? Yeah? By default, you don't have access to things. Yeah, actually, it's selected here. So by default, this is what you're asking about, really. If you allow any authenticated user, what that means is anything that you didn't put a permission check on, they will have access to. But anything else that you did, they won't have access to. Does that make sense? Unless they're in the user screen of the application. Now, you don't see the user screen. The users and role screens, these are built-in screens that you use to enter users into the system. During debug, they're not shown, but here I can show them by granting that, okay? Actually, let's go ahead and just grant all permission sets, okay? Now, once you enable the security administration, now this isn't going to, I'm going to add data in here, but it's not going to be real data, right? This is just development data. All this is just test data, okay? So when we deploy, which I'll get to next, I'll show you how this works with the authentication. But, so now I've got this administration. So this is where you, on a deployed app, okay, would enter in roles and users. My hair is burning. Okay, so let's enter a role like, I don't know, nurse. Okay. And now you have these permission sets. So a nurse can go ahead and add the patient. They can delete them. Okay, they can update. But they're not security administrators. All right. So then we set up roles and you set permission sets. And then when you do users, okay, so, Redmond. I'm using Windows users, so you don't actually have a password. It's going to verify against the domain. And then I'll just go ahead and say, okay, now I'll just select all the roles would be listed here, nurse. Okay, so that's how you would set up users. And then when users log in, that's their roles. They're allowed to. Now, this is just test data, though, so when we deploy, we have to deploy at least one user into the database, and the deployment wizard will ask us that. So I'm going to move on to deployment, unless are there more security questions? Okay, cool. Authorization groups? Like Active Directory you're talking about? Not in version 1, but version 2 will have that ability. Okay? All right. And actually, technically, we wrote an extension that allows you to import those groups from Active Directory, but we'll have a better solution for that in the next version. Okay, good question. All right, so let's talk a little bit about deployment. So, okay, there's a couple ways we can deploy. So there's a different configurations depending on how you want to deploy this thing. So our requirement was deploy to Windows Azure on our vision clinic, okay? So that's one of the options. But the first thing we need to decide is what kind of client, okay? Because this is really a Silverlight client. We can choose a desktop, meaning an out-of-browser Silverlight app, okay? Meaning running only on Windows, meaning that we can, you know, use Calm, though. We can access those devices. We can work with Office, okay? So that's a very common scenario. Windows machines, we want a desktop app. The web app is appropriate for Macs, okay? So you can have any type of operating system that, you know, Silverlight supports and browser that Silverlight supports. However, that's Silverlight 4, so you don't work with Calm. You can't get at the file system. It's not a full trust app, okay? So basically what happens when you have a web app, you just won't see the button for exporting to Excel. We take it away, okay? If you're doing any Calm stuff, like tomorrow I'll show you how to work with Calm, then it won't work. It just won't run. Okay, so you need to decide how you want to deploy it, client or web. Now then the other questions you get, if you have a desktop app, you can actually run the application services on the same machine as the desktop app. So physically, even though logically we have a three-tier application, physically we could deploy the middle tier and the client on one machine, and then they just connect directly like an old client server directly to the databases. Okay, this avoids having to have any other machines. Okay, it's just the user's laptop or whatever. But, you know, it's also internal only. The database has to be on a short wire. You know, it's a client server app. Okay, so otherwise you can go ahead and deploy to an IIS server that you have hosted or an ISP. There's like, I don't know, 20 or 40 of them that support Lightswitch directly deploying to them. Or you can host them in Azure, okay? So you need to configure an Azure account, you have a subscription, all that thing, all that stuff, okay, all that jazz if you do that, which I've done already. But for this example, let's just do end user machine because I don't have another server here. So, and let's walk through the publish wizard, how this works. Okay, so the first thing is just verify the choices I went through here before. If we do select IIS server, you have a couple options for this. You can create a package and then give that to an IT person, and then they install it into IIS. Or you can just remotely publish directly if you have web deploy set up on the IIS machine. Okay, so I'm going to go back over here, though, and do local. All right. Okay, first thing is, where do you want to put the package? In the case of a desktop local, you're actually creating a click-once package, like an EXE that people can click on. Okay, so... And then you decide whether or not you want to publish directly to the database or you want to create a script and hand that off to somebody to install, okay? Now, what database am I creating? I'm creating the patients and the prescriptions, right? And the security system, okay? So we have the external product data, but we have a lot of stuff we need to get into a new database. Okay, so then the connections. The first connection is the administrator connection. I'm going to publish the database right now, so it needs an administrator connection, okay? So I'll just use integrated security. But I don't want to use that for the user connection, right? So I'll create a login, app user tech days, okay? Okay, so that will be the user login, or basically what the middle tier and the web config is using to connect to the database. All right. Now here's the authentication question. Because I selected Windows authentication, it needs to know, well, who's the person that's going to set up these users and roles first? I need to put this guy in the database. Okay, so we'll go ahead and insert one row into the users as a security administrator who will only have access to the users and roles screen when they open it up first time. Okay, so that would be me. Now, if I had selected forms authentication, you would select username and password. Okay. All right, so prerequisites, I don't need anything else. Now, if we had a single user application, then we might have a prerequisite to install, you know, SQL Express as well. But I don't, because I'm going to put it on another machine. Okay, and then finally, it's going to list all the external data source connections. What are those connection strings to the live data? When this thing goes live, where do you want me to point this to? And if I want to sign the zap file so that the click once can be go ahead and be updated automatically. Okay, so I don't have a certificate, so just go ahead and publish that. Now, while this is publishing, it doesn't take very long, actually. It's going to create the database for me, and then it's going to create the click once package. But we can also take a look at an app I've already deployed to Azure, the same app. Okay. I didn't sign this one either, so I'm just going to continue. I trust myself. So let's see. I used forms authentication on this one. You'll see here's my prescription Contoso, cloudapp.net. All right, if I remember the password. Cool. So this is deployed somewhere in North America. I don't know where. I don't care. Here's our search. Notice it's deployed as a web app, not a desktop app this time, but it's generally the same. It's kind of what we went through before. Okay, so that is how we can host this easily in Azure. Okay, so we can quickly create an app in a couple days, and then we can throw this thing out to a local ISP in your own town, your own machine under your desk, or all the way up to Windows Azure for infinite scale. Okay, yeah. No. Okay. So it could be a remote connection to another SharePoint server itself. Okay. As long as it can authenticate, those machines can authenticate to each other. So if they're on the same domain, for instance, then it would work. Okay. If it was a completely separate domain, then you can do it, but you have to have, there's a whole setup that you have to do, right? And that's just in general how Windows works, authentication works. Because nothing's particular to LightSwitch itself, requirement-wise. Okay, so that was a question about SharePoint connections. And, you know, actually, I have SharePoint on this box. We could add SharePoint in here, but that would just get kind of complicated, I think. But okay, so that is deployment. And now, like, publish succeeded down here. So where did that go? By default, it just stuck it. Actually, it stuck it in the project, which was Vision Clinic. Publish. I mean, I could have put this on a share probably, but, and here's the setup. So it's just click once app. Okay. So there it goes. Cause I didn't sign it. It says, are you sure? And this will go ahead and stick it right there. I didn't specify an icon, but it sticks it right in the start menu, which is nice. And you'll notice that you'll notice that had Windows authentication and allow any authenticated user in, and so it allowed me in. Okay, so that's why I didn't have to. I am a security administrator though, because I put my Redmond Beth MA in there, and that's why I get the screens too. Okay, so but you'll notice I don't have new patient. I only have search in the products by category. Okay, so in order for me to start using the patient screens, right, I have to add myself as those permissions. Okay, so I could do that. I could say, okay, I am the master of everything. Okay, so now this is our live database. Save. Okay, and you'll see the difference that I see Redmond Beth MA is logged in here. Okay, so if we can always start it from here. Now when I re-log in, I should have the create new patient screen. Hopefully. I don't. Yeah, there it is right there. Okay, so now I've got access to add patients and all that stuff. Okay, so the last 5 minutes, I want to tease you with what's coming next, like, you know, tomorrow, because I want to see as many friendly faces in that room too. A couple things that can really enhance the application itself. are extensions, okay? And the way we load extensions is through the extension manager, okay? There's a lot of cool extensions on here. I already have a bunch installed, actually, on this machine, and from the community and all sorts of stuff. You can go on to the online gallery, and, oh, I'm not online, I guess. Okay, I guess not. You can go on the gallery, and you'll see all the extensions available, okay? And you can install them just like any other Visual Studio extension, okay, through Extension Manager. All right, I have a couple installed. Let's see. I've got this theme, okay? This is a free theme that we, the team, built, and we also have the full source code as well. It allows you to kind of create your own themes, and I'll create a theme tomorrow. But I have it installed already. So what I'm going to do is I just want to change the look and feel of this application because I don't want it to look like everybody else's. So once you install the extension into Visual Studio, then you enable the extension through this screen, the extensions tab. So I'm just going to go ahead and click on the Metro theme. And then you'll see it in the drop-down now. So there's the Metro theme. So now let's go ahead and run that, see what it looks like. See how different it looks. Now this particular theme is much more text heavy, you know, than the default theme. So you'll see a lot of text, and it'll be in capital letters and that kind of thing. So it's Metro-ish. Okay, you'll see there's the different icons. They're just black and white, very simple. You'll see there's the capital letter, the capitals in used across all the fields, and then you got, you know, different highlights and that kind of thing. So this is good for, like, you know, simpler screens, but there's our data grid, you know. I didn't have any of mine. Just open up Joe. See what that one looks like. There's the eye drops, a little bit different font styles, that sort of thing. So you can change all the brushes, the fonts, the everything you see. Now it's still the same shell, right? You still have this ribbon across the top and the menu on the left. Okay. So what does a new shell, what does a completely different shell look like? Well, it's totally up to you. It could look totally wacky depending on the shell that you install. But I've got one installed here, the Mune shell. It looks a little different. So I'm just going to use the Mune shell with the Mune shell theme. Okay. So that's a theme and a shell in one. So let's go ahead and see what this one looks like. Now this doesn't have the ribbon and the menu across the side. Okay. It has everything across the top, and it's all very, very text heavy. But it also has storyboarding and kind of animations. Okay, so there's, you see that, how it fades in, tasks and administration, okay? So I can go to tasks, and then kind of, there's our new patient. Okay, there's the search. Okay, so it looks very different, kind of moves in a little bit different. The loading is a little bit different. Okay, so that's kind of cool, I guess. Let's see, go to search, go open this one up. All right, so it's just a different, kind of a different look and feel. I mean, obviously this is a data app. You do a lot of, you know, CRUD. Okay, you do a lot of editing and updating and deleting and searching. So the concept of a data grid, if you have a brilliant idea for a user, instead of a grid with columns and rows, do it. You can create your own shell. I don't know what that would be. I'm not a designer. But that's something that you can take a look at. There's a couple shells out there that that we've created and the community's created too. Okay, so questions. Do you guys like what you see? Yeah? Okay, cool. Yeah. Yes. Yes, when you edit the data, it always updates the data source, whatever that is. If it's a database, if it's SharePoint, whatever, it will update. If the data source is updatable. So that would be database, SharePoint, you know. Different data sources may be read-only. If you create your own RIA services tomorrow, I'll show that if you're interested. And you don't enable CRUD, like update and adding and deleting, then LightSwitch will just disable that functionality on that particular screen for that data source automatically. Okay. Yes? The history of LightSwitch? Yes. This is the first version I have shown you. Okay, it was released in July of 2011. Yes, last year, I guess 6 months ago. The release was in July, end of July. Yeah. So I mean, we had a beta was released in August 2010. Then we had a beta 2 released in March,
And now this is the full-fledged product ready to go. You can buy it, love it, use it. It's coming soon. I can't tell you when. It's coming soon. You're going to love it. That's what I can say. Yes, you had a question? Tomorrow I will show you how to write an audit trail. Come to my session. It's not built in, but it's easy to do. Will there be ability to print out data? Okay, so like reporting, like a report. Okay, that's not built into the box, but DevExpress for $99 has a report writer for LightSwitch. It's an extension that you just can use, and it's client-side reporting. You report on the data sources in LightSwitch itself. Our recommendation, Microsoft's recommendation, of course, is to use reporting services, SQL reporting services. It's free. There's a free version of it as well. You can easily creates HTML-based reports, and so you can easily call, a browser from, LightSwitch command to do that as well. So a lot of people are using reporting services out there, but there is DevExpress does have a solution for client reports. In version 2, you gotta speak up, dude. Version 2, what? Not in the box. Yeah. Okay, we let our partners do that kind of stuff. So
I really like this product. How much are you innovating? What other products could I compare this product to?
What other products can you compare this to? Well, you could start from scratch and create your own, ASP.NET MVC site, or you could WinForms or your own Silverlight app, right, and do it manually, okay? Or you could use this and get started quicker, okay? So this is the solution for Visual Studio developers, I guess. Compared to, Fox Pro. I like Fox Pro. I used to use Fox Pro. I don't know. There's a lot of stuff out there that does similar things, but is not a three-tier app in the end. Okay, is not a .NET three-tier app in the end, so it's hard to compare. I guess Access would be a good comparison to the functionality that users would see, in that respect. So it's very similar. Probably you guys, see that. Maybe Excel you could compare it to a little bit, but they're really meant more. Those are meant more for your information workers, and LightSwitch complements those applications really well. So I don't really see it as an either or in that case. So, okay. So we're really hard at work building the next versions of this product. So I hope that you guys will go and visit the Developer Center, get more information on the product, how to use it. How do I videos, all sorts of stuff. We've got a great community out there. MSDN.com/lightswitch. Okay? All right, thank you.